Hello and welcome to the Warp Podcast. My name is David Tiltman, and today we are sticking with our theme from the last episode, which is the business models of the marketing communications industry and why they've become an effectiveness issue. Now, this is the second of two podcasts we're doing on this topic. In the first session on Tuesday, I looked at why business models have become such an effectiveness problem with our guest, Caroline Johnson, co-founder of the Business Model Company. Now, it's definitely worth listening to because it sets up a lot of the problems we're going to be talking about in this particular session. To recap quickly, we discussed how an agency sector built on the billable hour was under threat and a vicious circle where agencies are losing confidence in their product and are unable to make decent margins from their work. And with clients in turn getting less effective work and so seeing those agencies as vendors rather than partners. Now, in today's show, we're going to be talking to two different sorts of agency that have worked with Caroline to try to make changes. What did they do? Did it work? And what do they learn along the way? Now, I'm delighted to say Caroline joins us again, and this time she's joined by Lisa DeBonis, global CEO of design and innovation company Huge, and Nick Baker, founder and CEO of marketing consultancy Stick and Twist. Now, Lisa, Nick, great to have you with us, but I'm going to bring in Caroline in first. Caroline, why are these two such interesting examples of the changes we talked about in that first episode?
Thank you, David. I think it's such a wonderful opportunity to not just discuss the difficulties and the challenges and also look at some solutions, but to actually invite two leaders from different types of businesses and different sizes of businesses who have been on the transformation journey and are now what we call post-transformation. The question I get asked all the time is, why are some businesses successful and some are not? I always have the same answer, which is that it is down to the commitment of the leadership. So the opportunity today is to hear from two extremely committed leaders who have been on this journey and can share with you their experience, their insights, what they would have done differently, but also importantly, where they are now.
Great, thank you. And I think it's fair to say that, as you'll hear, Huge and Stick and Twist are different sorts of company, but that some of their experiences really, really sort of dovetail. Now, Lisa, I'm going to start with you. Maybe if you can just very quickly describe what Huge does, and then we can start talking about where you took the company.
Sure. Thank you, David. Hello, everyone. So Huge, as you touched on, is a design and innovation company. We create digital products and experiences that drive growth for some of the world's most ambitious brands. Two that we're quite known for are Google and McDonald's. So for Google, we've worked together and partnered with them for 13 years now, helping them design and innovate all sorts of platforms and products that they have, from obviously their search engine to YouTube and Android, and McDonald's. We're their global design partner, again, for 7 years and counting. And there we play a role whereby we accelerated their digital business transformation by essentially looking at all of their digital channels, integrating them seamlessly, adding commerce functionality, and wrapping it all up with a very unified global design system. So that's the type of work that we do.
Great. Now, the Huge story, so some people may have heard about the Huge story. It's been the subject of a book, Madison Avenue Makeover by Michael Farmer. Some of this was started, I think, by your predecessor, Matt Baxter. But for people who aren't familiar with that story already, just talk to us a little bit about the triggers to make the changes that you and Matt have made over the last few years. What were the problems you were actually trying to solve?
Sure. So the way, firstly, I think about or I describe the change in the model, as you touched on at the beginning, is really about a shift from effort to value. Okay. And I set that up first because, in truth, the trigger for change was very simple. we were, as an agency, like many others, I think, experiencing more limited growth or flatlining growth comparative to previous years. We were also finding that all of our people were working harder for less, and that was really driving burnout and resulted in us often having to cut out experimentation and innovation, which has always been a really important part of the business for us. And on our client side, critically, they too were not growing, and they too were asking for value and were pressured to demonstrate and prove the value of all the work that we were doing together. So, you know, the common theme here is lack of growth. That was ultimately the trigger, both for us as a business and for our clients.
I love that. And it's lack of growth, but it's also diagnosing that as a focus on effort rather than value. And I think that's something we're going to come back to. Nick, I'm going to ask you the same questions before we get into the specifics. So just very quickly describe what Stick and Twist does.
Yeah, thank you, David. And hello, everyone. So Stick and Twist simply is a marketing consultancy. We're a business that offers a full range of marketing strategy solutions to our clients. And our ambition for everyone we work with is to transform the impact that marketing has on their business. I would say we're a highly commercially focused business, and unapologetically so. And we partner with clients to unlock and accelerate the growth and performance of their marketing, and importantly, connect marketing to the broader, a bigger business ambitions that our clients have.
And so a similar question to Lisa, what was it that caused you to make change?
Sure. I mean, we had slightly different drivers. We're a much newer business and a much smaller business than Huge. When I set Stick and Twist up, my experience was almost purely within traditional agencies. And the reason we set Stick and Twist up was to answer some of the needs of our clients. And they were changing, that were taking strategy further upstream from purely communications. And we noticed that the offerings from traditional agencies and traditional consultancies, the models weren't set up to necessarily hit that sweet spot and combine the action-oriented thinking of agencies and what they're very, very good at, and the transformative thinking of consultancies. So we set up Stick and Twist to occupy a space that we believed existed, but was very underserved. And we always had the ambition of setting Stick and Twist up to be a very differentiated strategy business. The challenge we had at that time was, because of the old muscle memory of myself and some of the partners we brought in at the early stages, we only knew agency models. And so we set a business up, and I don't regret it, but we, to try and get our foot in the door as we were growing a business from scratch, we tried to offer better, faster, cheaper thinking, and it flew off the shelves. The challenge is, after 2 or 3 years of doing it, we realized we were leaving loads of value on the table, and we were underselling our services. And actually, the value we were creating for clients was completely different to what they were seeing from their other partners. And for us to grow, and we're a really ambitious business, for us to grow and accelerate at the level we want to and realize our full potential, we realized that we had to completely rethink our business model.
Thank you. So again, that theme of effort versus value and leaving value on the table, I think that's something Sure. We've heard a lot. Let's actually get into what you guys did then. So Lisa, I'm going to start with you to talk us through what happened at Huge. Can you sort of summarize the changes you made?
Sure. So I always talk about our transformation journey as being very holistic and really almost an inside out journey. So it has multiple dimensions, but the three I will share with you today that I think really are the most important ones are, firstly, obviously the business and pricing model. We've talked about that already as the sort of macro theme here, and that shift of moving from, you know, effort to value. I also talk about shifting from outputs to outcomes. The second one is around capabilities. So one of the big changes, one of the first things we did was invest in new capabilities to enable, in our case, a more data and tech and consultative approach to doing what we do through our crafts of creative and tech. And the third one was an org model change. So Huge was historically a regional business, and as a direct result of that, we had 13 different P&Ls, and we shifted that to a single global matrix model of one P&L. And those are the three I think that are most important, and ultimately have really influenced and transformed what we sell and how we deliver it to our clients.
Just to pick up on that then, what can you sort of describe what it is you sell? Caroline and I, in the first episode, used this term productization a lot. So what is it that you actually sell now that you didn't sell before?
What we sell ultimately are solutions to help our clients grow through the specific area of design and innovation, of experiences and products. That is the most important thing. Historically, Huge grew very effectively in the past through other types of offerings that were more in the world of integrated advertising and communication, for example. And it was fantastic work, and it worked for our clients at the time, but times have changed. And so, part of our journey has also entailed focusing on our core legacy capabilities and really investing them to make them future fit. And at its core, Huge, and in its origin, Huge was always a design and tech empowered sort of creative business. It was always at the forefront of new technologies and, you know, identifying creative solutions for our clients that drove growth. So we've come back to that. And in this process, have divested in some of the more extended, diversified offerings across the whole marketing and comms spectrum and really refocused on design and innovation.
And where are you in that journey? Do you feel that's complete, or is it something you're still sort of pushing at?
I don't know if the journey of transformation is ever complete, honestly, even though Caroline rightly said we are post-transformation. Look, for us, today, we're in year three of our journey. Okay, so year one was really started in earnest in 22 and was about investing in foundational capabilities. So I talked about investing in data and insights, investing in our tech platforms to inform and to accelerate, particularly our strategic and design offerings. That was year one. That was also when we started refining our go-to-market approach. Year two, which was 23, was about really rolling out all of these changes internally and starting to test them with our clients and in market and getting feedback. This is critical, understanding what was working, what was not. So this is the very exciting year. I mean, this for me, this year is year three, today is year three, and it is all about taking all the learnings we've been accumulating and applying them to optimizing our strategy through execution. I call it the beautiful basics because at its essence, it's about focus and refinement.
And how many products, if you like, have you sort of landed on?
Well, again, I like to talk more about solutions for our clients. And of course, solutions include products, but not always and not only. I will say, though, that one of the big learnings that we've gathered in our market fit phase, as we call it, which is when we were going in market and testing this with both existing and new clients, is that some products and offerings really rose to the top more than others and became, for lack of a better term, sort of better sellers, best sellers. You know, now we're looking at a scope of much, much fewer. You know, we started with double digits, and right now I can see a very clear core of around 7 to 10, depending on how I look at it, that keep on recurringly being, seem to be the most relevant, the most effective and efficient for us to provide our clients with.
Great, thank you. So just to wrap up on the Huge journey then, just talk to me a little bit about how the changes you've made have changed that value equation with clients and by the same token, changed the sort of profitability of the work that you do.
What I'm starting to see as a recurring pattern that I'm very proud of and I'm doubling down on in terms of the positive impact this journey has made on us actually spans sort of three areas. I think of it as our culture as a business, our capabilities, so our talent, and then, of course, the commercial impact as well. So again, I just wanted to pan out because for me, there's benefits that are more holistic. So on the culture, you know, as opposed to Nick, we're maybe on the other end, you know, whilst we have a maker culture at Huge, we're about creativity, we're about technology and design. So whilst we proudly sort of protect and fuel that craft side of our business, I think this transformation has really helped us become more client-centric and focus more on outcomes. So we have upped our commercial acumen, and I'm very proud of that, and we'll keep working on that. From a capability perspective, I have talked already about how we built this transformation, pushed us to build the investment case to invest in new capabilities that we were not doubling down on enough at the time. So that was in data in particular, and then in tech and AI throughout. But the other thing that it triggered was a shift to a global talent model, which again for clients means that the right talent for the right job can be mobilized and activated and leveraged regardless of, you know, not be bound by an office location, for example. And then commercially, yes, we are seeing interesting positive signals in different metrics. So we are seeing that when our new model is applied, we are opening engagements that are more upstream than they used to be. We also have examples of where an engagement has been more diverse. So we've engaged directly with the more tech-first sort of side of the organization versus marketing, and then obviously brought it back in. And critically, when we've applied the new model, we have seen uplifts in client satisfaction scores, in deal size, so the size of the actual engagement, and also the margin that those deliver.
So Nick, I'm going to ask you about your own journey now. So again, can you sort of summarize based on that starting point we talked about earlier, what changes you actually made?
Sure. I mean, we've been on a very similar journey, obviously, to Huge, although the inputs and outputs, as Lisa mentioned, are and the outcomes are slightly different. I mean, I would also say we've been through, we're on a journey. That's absolutely for sure. And we're kindred spirits in that sense. I think the initial part of our journey was foundational, which was around defining our client process and the value pathways we wanted to take our clients on, and move from talking about the capabilities we had, which was quite a common way of doing it, talking about, you know, I can do this, I can do that, or we can do this and we can do that, to a central process that allowed us to span client requirements at a much broader level. And building the operating system or the operating model that sits behind that was a very foundational piece of work. And, you know, spoiler alert, it takes time. Well, I mean, we're a small business, but it took probably longer than I thought it would do going into it. Certainly more hours, but coming out of it with the clarity that we had was the first chapter of our journey. The next one, and it's really specific, but it's really important. It was really important for us, was around the commercial model. And in particular, building commercial confidence in our team. You know, that was probably one of the biggest changes. You know, we spend a lot of time as strategists in agencies of the past talking about processes and what we do. And it's all fluff. You know, it sounds new and interesting, but actually clients that aren't that engaged in it. To then turn around to a team of people who are used to that world, to take them through that process and say, oh, by the way, we're going to completely change the way that you're going to charge, and you need to go from an effort-based model to a value-based model that we've talked about. It sounds really simple. I cannot tell you the whites of the eyes I looked into the first session I had with my team when I said, look, this is how we're now going to start to charge. And the fear of moving from a day rate or an hourly rate And, you know, the fear of what that would mean for clients and relationship had was real. And we had to do a much bigger piece of work with the team. And Caroline will nod along to this as well as we go, where we had to really break down all the muscle memory of old around the commercial model of a business and get them confidence. Because we're a consultancy business. We manage our own relationships. We don't have account handlers or client services to do that. We have to do it all ourselves. So actually, it's been a massive learning curve, both for me and the people. And I'd like to think we've come out the other end much more confident in terms of the value we bring. And then we're in this phase now of our journey where we're properly taking it to market. We're relaunching it. And with that, we've developed a new narrative of our business. We're cementing the work we've done to date around the process, the products, the programs we've delivered. We've done a really important critical part that, without wanting to skip to the end in terms of what I would advise, we've involved our clients. We've gone out to our trusted clients and said, look, this is what we want to do. What do you think? It was a mantra that I had when I set the business up in the first place, just to see if stick and twist could even be a thing. And now we're going back out to those same clients saying, by the way, we want to change. And it's all grounded in the fact that we want to create more value for them as a business and give those clients the opportunity to really demonstrate to their business the impact that the work that they're doing can have. And then it becomes hugely mutually beneficial for the work that we're doing.
You talked about change in the sort of commercial model. In terms of the actual, the work itself, is there anything that you used to do that you don't do now, or anything new that you've started on, sort of building in new offers?
Yeah, I mean, we're still doing a lot of the work we did in the past. We're doing it more efficiently, for sure. And how that disseminates through the business and the team is slightly different. I would say we're doing much further upstream work than we ever used to, because not only are we trying to create commercial confidence, we're trying to create confidence in the team in terms of the value that we bring. You know, I said up front that we're a business that's obsessed around creating impact, and reality is, to do that properly, we have to help them unlock new areas of growth, and we have to start to look at how we can properly innovate and transform. We would never have done that as a business 2 or 3 years ago. We certainly had the skill set, and potentially we're now recruiting a slightly different skill set as we do move further upstream. But that's certainly an area that you look at the type of products, projects, a bit like Lisa said, in terms of, you know, the value of the work we're now doing has definitely improved, both in terms of the ticket price, but also more importantly, what we're delivering for clients and how we are genuinely transforming the impact that the work is having and giving marketing a much bigger seat in the broader business ambitions. It's something that we're hugely proud of, and it's something that I don't think we would have done, certainly in my old world, but even when we set Stick and Twist up 2 years ago, I don't think we would have been doing that.
Something that's come through both from what Lisa said and from what you've said, if I'm understanding this right, is that there is an opportunity, given that marketers often have to sort of prove the value of what they do, make that case up into the boardroom, that is a profitable place to be playing for a company like Huge and Stick and Twist in really helping them on that journey. Is that a sort of fair assumption?
Yeah, I think it's completely fair. And actually, you know, the amount of business casing we're doing at the moment across pretty much every one of our clients is testament to that. And I think that comes from a place of the value that we've created in the past and how we can then support clients have that conversation further up. I mean, when I set Stick and Twist up in 2018, I go back to my first, one of my first cred slides, which I shamelessly took out to a load of clients, non-compete, of course, and said, you know, what do you think of this? One of the key principles of that was to sit on the shoulder of those ambitious CMOs to help them guide the decision making, and, you know, honestly, having a conversation with them, being very honest and saying, "Look, we want to make you look good, and we want to drive you further into your business." And I'm pleased to say we don't talk about it as much overtly anymore, but it's certainly an area where we're driving value at a personal and a relationship level.
And I ask Lisa, so I'll ask you as well. I mean, in terms of the margins you're able to make off of that work, is it a significant improvement on where you were before?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're a different business to Lisa, so the margin levels will probably be slightly different. I haven't ever divulged the commercial information to Lisa and vice versa, but by nature, the consultancy services that we offer come with a certain value. Are we creating more value through the work we're doing? Absolutely. I would say that the biggest thing for me, similar to what Lisa said, was around the overall value, commercial value of the project work that we're now doing, and the programs we're delivering for clients. And it's moving from, we still do project work, but yeah, I look at the relationship we've got with the likes of Lloyds Banking Group, Bupa, the AA. They're now on program solutions with us. That means that the relationship we're building, both sides, is highly valuable. And we are certainly moving into areas which cements that even further.
So having sort of heard those stories, I think it would be helpful now to run through a few sort of core themes or issues that people going down this route might sort of encounter. And both of you talked about, in different ways, talked about the cultural challenge of change. Is this something that it's easy to sort of underestimate when you're looking at this? If you spend a lot of time focusing on the actual numbers and the figures and the products, Lisa, kick us off with this. Talk to us about that cultural side.
Taking the time to help people understand the why behind all of this and being comfortable with the uncomfortable and all those other cliches, but, you know, being comfortable with the ambiguity that it brings and the change that it brings. And then also their very practical need to help them build up new skills and new behaviors and train a different muscle. That stuff takes time. And, you know, perhaps, again, just to compare and contrast with Nick's business, a business like Huge has very, very, I'm sure Nick has incredible humans and brains in there, but the typologies, the archetypes of the people in a business like Huge are very diverse. So you have technologists, you have designers, you have writers, you have obviously three different types of strategists, you know, that have different versions of expertise. You have data scientists, data engineers, etc. And, you know, what unites them all is a desire to have impact through the work. Of course, there are, you know, nuances to that, but ultimately, especially in a business like Huge, our people come together and stay for the love of the work, right? And so I say that because asking them all to take five steps back and see the more macro conditions we're operating in and the bigger pressures that our clients are confronted with every day, and then the relative role that the work we do plays in that, because let's be honest, it's relative, is, you know, I have learned requires time and different archetypes of people in the business you know, got there and are getting there and embrace it. Others, for others, it's, you know, of less interest and so they move on. So, but, you know, that process of taking them along on the journey, helping them understand the why, engaging them, empowering them to be part of the change. Yes, I must say, you know, it takes longer than we probably had estimated. And so it's something that I'm making much more of a focus moving forward.
You're having to explain why you're making these changes. Is it easy for people to focus on the threat rather than the opportunity, if you see what I mean? Because it's almost like it's an admission that something's gone wrong.
I love that question. So actually, you know what? Maybe there's a learning right there that I've just landed, is that I probably personally, and then as a leadership team, we all had... We all sort of complimented each other in how we explained it, but I do focus a lot on the threat. And really what motivates a lot of creative people is the opportunity. In fact, when I talked earlier about my focus now that I'm in the CEO role about beautiful basics, I've just post-rationalized my strategy there. But like this conversation makes me realize I am focusing on what makes a place like Huge an amazing place to work and an amazing partner to partner with for growth for a client, because it's about the people, it's about the work, it's about the brand. And so the strategy remains. I believe in the direction we're going in. I believe in the need and the opportunity for the industry broadly. But the way I'm executing that is shifting to be more about growth, about opportunity for impact, great work, growth of our talent, and obviously of our clients through the work. Yeah, it is absolutely, I think the motivation for our talent, at least I'll speak for my talent at Huge, is very much more in the impact of that the work can have for our clients and for their careers, frankly, than it is about the threat for the industry as a whole.
Thank you. Nick, I guess similar question to you. What was the sort of cultural blockers you faced and how did you overcome them?
I mean, very similar to Lisa to a certain extent. I mean, let's call it as it is. It's really bloody hard to change the culture of a business at the pace that you've changed the operating system and the model of the business. I mean, actually found that bit relatively easy. I was surprised at how long it's taken. It's when we're still working at it at the moment around the cultural ambition of the business to make sure it matches what we want to achieve commercially. I mean, we've always, Stick and Twist was set up with a founding principle of creating a business that allows talented strategists to be talented. The challenge is we're asking them to forget everything they've done in the past, which is not everything, you know what I mean? There's lots of skills they've learned that are going to be hugely beneficial, but purely from how we work with clients, the processes we take them on, the commercial model that sits between it is all new. And I'm amazed at how, having brought people into the business under the guise of, you know, you think agency strategy is broken, come and join a business that's going to do things differently and allow you to generate more value for your clients. Even by presenting all of that to them, the nervousness of change and the muscle memory that needs to be broken down has surprised me. That's not to say the ambition's not there. That's not to say they've rejected it. I'm not sure if they're fearful of it. I mean, I think there's been a confidence gap that we've had to help them bridge around delivering the level of work that we want to. And I think from my personal point of view and looking at Stick and Twist as specifically, helping them balance the cultural and commercial ambitions of the business has been something that we've worked at and we will continue to work at. Because there's you know, from an individual and a team perspective, the values that we want to adhere to will slightly change in nuance. So it's important that we don't let the commercial ambition of the business outweigh the cultural position of the business, because we'll never attract talent in if that's the case. And it's very important that we allow our talent to develop. And when we bring new people in, it's additive rather than in place of. And we really build a team and a culture and a team that is all around personal growth and personal development as an individual, but also how that the implication that has on our team.
Caroline, I just want to bring you in quickly here, because this does feel like a sort of core theme. Any builds on what Nick and Lisa have said in terms of things other companies looking to make these changes should be aware of?
I mean, I can also talk for all of our other clients, and they would all be saying the same thing as Nick and Lisa. And I do, at the beginning, make it really clear that the devil is on the inside. There's a lot of wrong assumptions and the wrong belief system in our industry that the problem is in the market and the problem is with maybe clients or procurement or competitors. But actually, the hardest challenge you will face is not with your clients or landing your new model. The hardest challenge will be in the safe and healthy cultural transformation, the reprogramming and the re-systemizing of the belief system, the mindset, the behaviors, and the values.
Caroline, you've landed on it. I think one of the points I wanted to make as well, there's the internal transformation. We haven't experienced anywhere near as much resistance from clients, or whether that's new clients or existing clients. Actually, probably my biggest concern going into this, and Caroline, you'll remember this well, where I say, well, how are we going to get our clients to shift from this model onto our new model? And we had a process, and it was, you know, we had a plan to do so, but actually it's been welcomed. I think it feels refreshing. We're probably, if we have a simpler offering as a business, but the important take up for me, well, that's dealing with our clients who are buying our services, or it's the procurement teams who are working on our contractual arrangements. Actually moving on to this new model and this new system has actually been quite refreshing and very welcomed. And certainly from a new business point of view, I would say that we're doing less pitching in the traditional sense in terms of giving away all our thinking for free, which is what sort of all the wrong things happen in the pitching processes of old, where you do all the thinking up front and you sometimes get nothing for it, versus now we're pitching the process, and we're pitching the way that we would help clients answer problems with some very, very clear, robust case studies that show how we've taken other clients on those journeys. And that has probably been the biggest surprise for me, actually, on all of this, is that how receptive it's been in the market and how the way that we go after new clients and the way that we tell our story to new clients is totally changed. And for me, it feels hugely liberating and hugely refreshing.
Lisa, can I just bring you in there? Because there's an interesting point in there about new clients versus current clients, and how, particularly with the latter, how you take them on a journey to a different place.
In our experience, it has been easier, so to speak, to engage with new clients on this model. It's pretty obvious, blank slate for both sides. And the rules of engagement are clear up front. Because many of our existing clients are longstanding clients, I will say that it's more challenging. And the key to a safe transition is timing and reading the signals of when, you know, finding that trigger, to use the term you were using earlier, of when the time is right. And in the best cases, we have, back to what Nick was saying in a different context, we've sort of co-authored the transition with them. So we've taken our time to share with them, engage them on the benefits, what the changes are, what they're not as well, what's in it for them. And then finding a moment in time when it made sense to shift to a new model. I won't deny it's with existing brands that we operate, obviously a natural trigger is a new client, a new human person that we're working with who didn't know from the past and is maybe engaging us in different types of work. But it takes more time, and we're very respectful and grateful for the partnership we have with these, particularly the longstanding clients. So we are being very thoughtful and respectful about how to do that and when to do that. And in some cases, honestly, we've just embedded them and enabled them to benefit from just a culture that is more outcomes focused, that is more commercially sort of, centric. And without really changing the engagement. But as far as I'm concerned, that's a win-win as well, because it's part of the journey.
Where are you heading next? Where do you take this next? You both describe this as a sort of journey that is not yet over. So what happens next? And just one or two pieces of advice for anybody looking to do something similar. So Nick, why don't you kick us off?
So where we're going next is quite clear. We're going to properly launch Stick and Twist 2.0 to market. We've got some really exciting updates happening around our narrative positioning and how we start to get a robust set of case studies that truly demonstrate the value of the outcomes we've delivered for clients. And then we'll refine, and we continue to refine. It's been a constant process of refinement. Like Lisa, We've got some products and programs that seem to be more desirable than others. We'll continue to evolve our offering within the sphere of strategic services and solutions that we offer. And we will continue to learn.
Brilliant. Thank you. Lisa, same question to you.
So what next? I touched on it earlier, but this is the year of refinement and focus. In other words, simplification. So similar to Nick, I have already started a simplification of our positioning and our narrative out in the world. What will also follow is how we show up, how we talk about our expertise and our offerings. Implicit in that is a reduction of these, a continued sort of focus on those that where we can really bring deep expertise and excellence in craft and outcomes. And the other one is all about the talent and the people we were talking about earlier. I'm very proud of all the things we did very quickly, but I want to really double down on the talent transformation part of the journey and slow down to move fast, if you like, in terms of really bringing people along and building up the new capabilities and the new muscle memory we were talking about.
Great. And Caroline, any final advice to anyone listening to this and keen to get stuck in?
I mean, this is the year. If you don't change your model or make some big, you know, improvements to stay relevant and be able to align your operating model and business model to your clients' needs, you're going to really struggle in 2025 and 2026. So this is the most important topic for this year. And I think the industry needs to hear more success stories and less conversation and debate about why it's difficult. We know it's difficult, but nothing is more terrifying than not changing.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. So thank you, Caroline. Thank you, Lisa. And thank you, Nick. We'll be back next time on the Walk podcast. If you like what you've heard, then please do subscribe to the Walk podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you really like what you heard, then leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening.